This is Daily Politics. Here we look into the ins and outs of everything Kenyan politics. We pull no punches and have no reason to sugarcoat anything that matters to Kenyans. We say it as it is. My name is Roselyn Obala, political editor, NTV, and I'm joined with
Gushu Ndongo, editor, Saturday Nation.
And I'm Oliver Madenge, multimedia editor, NTV.
Yes, we start with the opinion polls that yes. have just been released. We see for the first time Azimio presidential candidate Raila Odinga is actually leading by 42%. And William Ruto, I think, has had a setback, trailing at 38%. What could be the reason?
Rosin, this opinion poll for me comes at a very interesting time. You know, people are attributing it to the selection of the running mates.
Yes.
Before that, we had the other opinion poll that had shown that the two of them were tying at 42%. Mm-hmm. And my question is more of why is it that we are now have either undecided or people who are not voting increasing to 20%?
Yes.
That for me is very curious, given that there were only 16% the last time the opinion poll was done.
Yes.
But even more interesting is the counties that or the strongholds
yes.
that Infotrack has attributed to the two presidential candidates.
Yes.
With Raila leading in 20 of the counties and Ruto leading in 16 of the counties.
Mm-hmm.
I did some quick maths today. I haven't yes. done the analysis of, given the opinion poll, what they got in those counties.
Yes.
But the total value of votes in the 20 counties that Raila is leading is
yes.
11,032,428.
Yes.
And for Ruto, the 16 counties that he's leading is 7,076,661.
Yes.
While the swing counties, as they attributed them,
yes.
is 4,043,343.
Yes.
Doing some quick maths with the same numbers.
That's where you are going.
We are there.
Doing some quick maths in the same numbers. Yes. I see a situation where we are going to have a very tight election.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the 4 million, even if you share it among the two,
yes.
and even when you do the maths with the rest, you see, like, for instance, you can't give Raila the 2.5 million votes in Nairobi as a full basket. We are going to have a very tight election. And I think that's what the opinion poll is pointing to. But the more curious thing is that 20%.
Of the undecided
and those who are not willing to vote or who are unwilling to say who they are going to vote for. Because
yes.
that's a very critical number because we have 60 days to the elections.
Yes.
We are in the final stages of this election, but we are not seeing the numbers moving.
and to make it interesting,
yes.
Just to buttress on Oliver's point.
Yes.
For the undecideds, what are they waiting for? Because, I mean, previously people were saying it's a running mate.
Yes.
It's to see whether Raila is running. It's to see the running mates. Mm-hmm. It's for the manifestos.
Yes.
I mean, everything is coming into place. So the 20%, what are they really waiting for? And then the other issue that is actually, that may surprise us, maybe Oliver, I know that you agree with me on this, is Wajakoya. You know, that maybe the 20, if out of the 20%, only 10% go to Wajakoya, he becomes a very serious candidate.
Yeah.
But now, to the other point I've seen and noted about these polls, is that they constantly give Baba between 25 to 30% of mountain.
Mountain, yes.
This is a very curious thing because it's happening in almost every poll, 25 to 30% of mountain, 25 to 30% of mountain, and that was happening even before Martha Karua. So I don't know what effect Karua has had on the mountain. I don't seem to see that effect much as people talk about the mother effect in the polling, in that poll.
I think that's a very curious thing because we all thought that mother would actually ensure that Raila eats into Ruto's
support yes.
base in Mount Kenya, but this is not happening. And I wonder why this is the case. I know that there are issues. If you talk to people from Mount Kenya, there are issues about Martha,
mm-hmm.
Not her just being a woman,
yes.
Which is one.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that about her as Justice Minister.
Yes.
During the Mugiki killings, mm-hmm. She never did anything about it. And a lot of mothers blame Mother Karua and Michuki, the late Michuki, for whatever happened.
Yes.
I also think that one of the other factors is that Mother has not really been a key figure in Mount Kenya politics.
Yes.
For a very long time.
In fact, I see the polling, funny enough, seemed to suggest that Raila will get more votes in places like Laikipia,
mm-hmm.
yes.
and Murang'a and Kiambu
than Kirinyaga
itself.
Yeah.
So it's
but for me, I'm not surprised.
I think for the progressives, maybe mm-hmm. Mother was bringing the progressive and making the Baba vote. A vote for Baba look safer
mm-hmm.
for those people who are uncomfortable with quote unquote the faces on the other side.
Yeah.
For me, I think if you look at it, both the presidential candidates now, William Ruto of Kenya Kwanza and Raila on the other side, both of them are settled on running mates from Mount Kenya. So that could also be another factor.
Yeah, true.
But remember again, in terms of the politics, Martha Karua actually ran for governor of Kirinyaga in 2017.
Yeah.
And the current governor, Anne Waiguru, actually won against her. So again, being that now she has taken as the running mate, there are also some dynamics that come with it. And you've just talked about the Mount Kenya politics. It goes beyond Martha being that she's the running mate of Azimio, where the sitting president is a chair of the Azimio Council. We've always heard where there are issues that the people from Mount Kenya have been raising, and it's not just who the candidate is or of the manifesto they have. There are issues to do the economy. We've been talking about Mount Kenya people saying they want money in their pockets, the policies that are there. So there are so many dynamics to the candidature of Martha Karua as a running mate that may be impede on the Raila's vote hunt in Mount Kenya region. But as I finish, I'm also bedevered by the fact that if you look at the consistency of these opinion polls,
mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing anyone that is actually eyeing just a heartbeat away from the 50+1%. Because in the last opinion poll, we were neck to neck at 42. Mm. Ruto has a setback, but Raila has actually maintained the 42%, even after having a campaign for a period with the deputy, and after even unveiling his manifesto. So I think there's so many issues that we really need to look at it, even as we talk about climbing the mountain and the other regions of this country.
And that is actually why Oliver's point on the 20% really needs to be taken very, very seriously by any politician
who's
running for president. Because,
yes.
I mean, that's where the 50+1 is going to come from.
Yes.
But now to give credit to Baba, the mm-hmm. polls were done before Kalonzo and Musyoka joined Azimio. Before that, only Kalonzo was in Azimio, Musyoka was not.
Yes.
So the polling was done before Kalonzo Musyoka wholly rejoined Azimio. So that's why you can see, if you look at those polling numbers, the eastern counties of Makueni, Kitui, Machakos have a lot of undecideds.
Yes.
So hopefully, with Kalonzo coming in,
mm-hmm.
The undecideds in those regions may swing back to Baba. But for us to see that, we have to wait until the next polls.
Yeah.
But you see, some of these polls, if you've seen some of the indicators that have come out, there are some of the undecided voters who are saying, why should I actually go and vote? Because I've been voting and I'm not seeing the governance that I've been voting for. There is also the confusion where we have a government in opposition and opposition in government. So actually, this is a scenario that Kenyans are being treated to for the first time. So the dynamics are actually playing out, that there are those Kenyans who actually don't feel why their vote count. But again, the constitution says that for you to have that good governance you want, you must actually exercise the vote. you must vote to ensure either you have the change you want or decide to continue with what you want. Because again, if we have this big number, in the last opinion poll it was 16, now it is 20. I'm sure the next time we'll have, maybe it will be 25 or 30. For me and the leadership of this country, that should worry them. Why are so many people not decided under 60 days to the elections?
Yeah, and it's you, as Gushu mentioned, there was the issue of the undecided. Previously, they were saying they don't know what the policies these people are holding. But now, Baba launched a manifesto, and
William will launch on the 30th.
Yes, William will launch on the 30th. The cost of living is a critical item in from the opinion polls. It's the leading issue that Kenyans are looking at. And I don't know, I personally, I will have to confess, I have not deep dived into the manifesto, though I know what it says. But does it address these concerns by Kenyans? The cost of living, unemployment, does it totally address this issue? Does it say how is the Baba government going to cater for these issues?
There's something that I like about the Baba manifesto, although it's something he has said before, but he has buttressed it, is the issue of social welfare. I'm one of those people who don't believe in giving people msaada in the traditional format, where you give people gorogoro ya ya mahindi.
We are Africans.
Those things are stolen by chiefs, and by the time you procure 2 million bags of maize, by the time it gets down there, it's 100,000 bags.
Yes,
I'm a proponent of social welfare system that brings gives people money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the 6,000 that Baba promises always excites me, because once you give somebody 6,000 who's no poor, you're not just helping them, you're helping the local butcher man there, you're helping the local shopkeeper there.
Yeah.
I mean, the money circulates in that economy. It helps grow those two rural economies. Mm-hmm. The other pillar I liked about the Baba one is something that people always keep talking about, called manufacturing.
Yes.
And I know he made a blunder with the Mitumba thing. But if you look at the bigger picture, let's be honest, guys, if you're going to develop this country, somebody has to take the bullet or a bullet or two.
Yes.
A person bringing in Mitumba, for instance, creates job maybe at maximum 3-4 people.
Yeah.
The trader and maybe the transport guy who brings the Mitumba there.
Yeah, but don't forget that it's because of Mitumba that we have a deal with the US where we are exporting textile up to 40 billion.
But you see, now we have to make a choice. And that's what I'm telling you, we have to actually bite the bullet. Because, for instance, if you put up industries that manufacture clothes, the likes of the way Kikomi used to be previously in the past, you have employed not only more number of people, but diversified number of people. An engineer will get a job there.
But you see,
lab guy will get a job there.
While I agree with your point,
yes.
But you see, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Rivertex today is running,
yes.
But people cannot afford those clothes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So how are we going to ensure
that's why if you check in the Baba manifesto, so he talked about lowering the cost of doing business.
Yes.
Because one way to make things affordable is to lower cost of inputs like electricity, and such things. And once we lower that, we're able to produce things at a cheaper, cost-effective rate. I'll give an example. EPZ companies, sometimes I think there's a month where they're allowed to sell clothes to us.
Yes,
I think
actually,
it's a month or two
made
in Kenya at
KSCC.
If you go there, you actually be very shocked that some of those clothes are manufactured in Kenya. They are very nice things. And then another thing that I think I liked about the manifesto. I didn't like. I've told you the things I liked. Eh?
Yes.
No, the conundrum in the manifesto, or the elephant in the manifesto, is where the money is going to come from. Because every time you ask the Azimio guys, where is the money going to come from? They tell you, we will seal corruption holes. That is not a strategy. That is not a revenue-raising strategy.
Yes.
Any economist will tell you that. You cannot be asked at the Oliver, where are you going to raise money from? Then you say, we are going to seal loopholes of corruption, which you don't even know. We just,
give
estimates.
144 billion shillings a year to support the 6,000 shillings is a lot of money.
A lot of money, yes. Mm. In fact, somebody was calculating that the Baba's promises will cost 400 100 billion.
Yeah.
Yes.
So much as you're going to seal quote-unquote corruption loopholes, that cannot be a revenue-raising strategy.
Yeah, it can't.
But you see, we need to look at it in terms of, if you look at the reports, the corruption rate reports that have been released, you find that the Kenya loses around 800 billion annually to corruption. And Baba has been very consistent when he's speaking. He says, I know where the money is and I will get them. My question is, do you teach somebody how to fish, or you give them the fish to eat? Because that is a question that everybody should be asking. If we'll be giving 6,000 every time, then it means I only need to wait for that 6,000 to be given. Yeah. But if you tell me how to do and get that 6,000, I might multiply it from the 6,000 and maybe 12,000 and even more. Now, the question here has been that we have very glossy and very beautiful manifestos that we share to Kenyans, but it all boiled down to the implementation. Remember the Jubilee administration 2013, we were talking about the double digits, we were talking about million employments annually.
A stadium Kimara.
Yes. We were talking about the 10,000 kilometer of roads. Yeah. I'm sure now if you go and do a scale audit of what has happened, the discussions we'll be having, you cannot implement in a day.
So my question
from where I sit is, yes, they're very good on paper, but as you tell us this is what you're going to do, tell us, is it going to be a sustainable venture, or it will just be a campaign gimmick where we only do it at this particular time and then you'll come and tell Kenyans, we tried it, it was not able to work. Well, this issue of manufacturing is also the same. If you talk to the Mutumba people, they'll tell you they import close to 15 billion annually. That's a lot of money. I'm sure even the people who are employed in that business are also so many. So as much as we are promoting Buy Kenya, Build Kenya, we should also reciprocate it and complement it with the Mitumba business.
Yeah, Gushu, as you tell us about what MPs did yesterday in Parliament, are manifestos a key factor in a Kenyan election? Do they make a difference?
Not really. I think only the... I'll put it even, I think, 5% or less that actually look at that, make it a campaign issue. Mm-hmm. And it has to be something so striking. I mean, like Wajakoya's widow.
And now the latest, the snake.
And snake farming. You know, yes. Something that is so striking. Or even Kibaki's free education plan.
Yes.
That seemed very radical in 2002.
Mm.
And for some people, even the laptop of Jubilee.
Yeah. Made a difference. Yeah.
Excited a few guys. So it has to be radical, fresh, and unique. But then as we go to manifestos, first of all, we have to have an election. And from how MPs behaved yesterday, Roselyn, I don't think we are very safe in terms of having a 2017-proof election. What is happening, guys? I mean, Chebukati and MPs have had 5 years since 2017.
Yes.
Yeah. And here we are, 2022, 2 months to election. Same old, huh?
I always see people keep on blaming the IBC. Mm-hmm. Let me be the devil's advocates. That in 2017 and 2018, we had commissioners who actually quit from IBC.
Mm-hmm.
And MPs had from 2018... to now to replace the commissioners. And we kept on talking about quorum and whatever is happening at IBC and even the proposals that were brought to Parliament. The MPs did not receive the proposals yesterday. They received the proposals at the beginning when these people were trying to push for the amendments that had been discussed at the Supreme Court that led to the nullification of the 2017 presidential elections. So as much as we also blame the IBC for not putting pressure on MPs to pass the proposed laws and regulations, we need also to ask our MPs, when you throw away regulations that are going to give the enabling environment for implementation of a law that you actually yet to pass, what are you telling us? Because the election amendment law that is now before the Senate, even if it is passed today and it is enacted in law, there is no enabling instrument to implement it. So we are back to 2017.
What exactly does the Act say? What exactly does the law say? How does it cure the problem of 2017?
You see, there were two proposals. There was the election regulations of 2022, and then we also had the elections amendment of 2022, which sought to align with the Supreme Court ruling of 2017 and also the High Court ruling on minor KIA. So all these had the proposed law and also the enabling regulations. So first, the MPs have gone to kick out the regulations. The amendments to the law are still stuck in the Senate. So even if the Senate is to pass them today and they are enacted into law, where is the enabling legal framework to implement it?
You see, one of the things that the Supreme Court used to nullify the election was that there were 11,000 polling stations where there were no... IBC said there was no 3G
network. Yes.
And so IBC wanted a mechanism which is allowed by the Act. The regulations were just to guide how this is done.
Yes.
The Act allows IBC to use other mechanisms of sending this information.
Outside electronic.
Outside
the gazetted polling stations.
Yes. Yeah. You see, now the problem with that is that we know technology fails.
Yes.
And IBC was saying, yes, we had the results, but we couldn't send them on time, and we couldn't send them through the electronic transmission system because there was no network.
Yes. Yes.
You see, that was not the fault of the IBC in the first place. Mm. I know the government keeps insisting that there is network, but we have been to this country. Mm. We have traveled this country.
Do you know places, what happens?
There is places you there are no net.
Even,
no
in, this city,
even in this city. Even in this city. Where you struggle with the network. So yes. that was one of the things that... And you see, the Supreme Court can use the same ruling by Maraga to nullify this new election if this happens again. So I think MPs were a bit reckless because, as Roselyne has mentioned, and IBC has insisted, these regulations were in Parliament for a very long time.
Yes.
MPs sat on them.
Yes.
They didn't wake up yesterday and realize there was no public participation on,
yes.
on them.
Yeah.
You see, they didn't wake up yesterday and say that they were time barred.
Yes.
You see, they were all in a hurry to go home. We know they are going. They have gone for their John what you call it, Sindai.
Sinadi or something.
Yeah. Yes. So yes, they can be recalled to do these things.
Yes.
But they were in a hurry to go home.
Yes.
And campaign. Mm. Yeah. That was the only reason. I don't think there's any other reason why these MPs should not have passed this as a priority.
But then, guys, so what do we do? We're here where we are. What do we do? Are we just setting up ourselves for another reversal?
And
are you going to become the only country in the world?
I think we keep on saying that we are going to just have a repeat of the 2017, because from where we sit, everything is back to where we were in 2017. When you throw regulations that allows a presiding officer to either look for network where they can, or even move to the constituency tallying center and fill a form witnessed by the returning officer to be able to transmit the results from that place, and at the same time you deny the national returning officer, who is the chairman of IBC, to verify the final results at the polling stations when there is a dispute, then you're just taking us back to the issues that led to the nullification of the elections.
Yeah, and you see, what the other thing that IBC wanted is to safeguard their own staff from political interference.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because you see, currently IBC must reveal to the political parties when they are appointing returning officers and their deputies.
Yes.
And this is what IBC wanted to safeguard, because they don't want their officers to be compromised in a situation that would compromise.
And also attacked.
Yeah, and also attacked in a situation that would compromise the election. So for me, you asked how can we remedy this?
Yes.
It's very simple. IBC should call one Amos Kemunya, the leader of majority in Parliament, and tell them the House should be recalled at some point within this month and pass those regulations.
Simple as that.
It's as simple as that.
But I think we also paying
a
very high
price. Option,
yes?
The other option is IBC to sit with the Judicial Election Committee, because the decision of the court stands. So if the MPs cannot help us implement what the court has said, why don't we now go back to the judiciary? Because it's the one that is supposed to implement what has been ruled by the courts.
But the Supreme Court ruled. Is there much recourse there now?
No, there is no recourse. So that's what we are saying, that we have to look for a mechanism. Either the House is recalled and passes these regulations, or as Rosina is saying, the IBC goes to the Judicial Election Committee and they discuss this matter and see how can it be remedied.
Okay, that's it for Daily Politics. But I think you're also paying a very high price for trust deficit. If we trusted each other more, we wouldn't need all these laws, all these technologies.
Yes.
That is it for this episode of Daily Politics. See you tomorrow.